The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Got some news coming in for you now, as Fox News is now able to project that Ted Cruz will win the state of Wisconsin in a contest that was largely between him and Donald Trump. The final vote is still coming in. We're still counting, and this is our projection at this hour that Ted Cruz will win. And now Brett Baer is back with me. The question is the margin.
Exactly. And now this is a big win for Ted Cruz. Let's not minimize this. He was positioned well going in, but the fact that he pulled off a win, we're just 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, Wisconsin looked like it was lining up for Trump. Now we're looking at the margin. Right now, you know, the spread, as you look at the raw vote total coming in, is huge, but that will narrow according to our Fox News decision desk.
The numbers are basically meaningless that are on the board right now.
Right now, as they're coming in. But listen, as the night goes on, if Ted Cruz gets upwards of 48%, 49%, he's going to get the state winning delegates, and then you look at each congressional district, he could box Trump out of a lot of delegates, the 42 that are on the table right now.
Because it's now coming down to the point, I thought Tucker hit it on the head when he said what's at stake tonight is whether there's a contested convention. The convention is what's on the line tonight, because no one's going to win or lose this race based on these results. But every delegate that Cruz can deprive Trump of makes that last stretch over the finish line more difficult for Donald Trump. And even though he's expected to win big in New York, there's a question about how he'll do in Indiana, how he'll do in California. So he wants every last delegate.
It's all about the math, 1237. And even in New York, which is the next contest, 2 weeks from tonight, if Trump doesn't get to 50%, he then, all of the congressional districts split in New York, and the 95 delegates there get divvied up among the candidates. You're talking Trump and Cruz and Kasich.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a breakdown of math. You suddenly look at California, June 7th. And that will be the deciding factor in this race.
In which Ted Cruz is well organized and has been fighting now for months. I mean, he's been looking at that June 7th day, understanding its potential significance. Trump's campaign does so well at motivating people from the candidate. You know, it emanates from Donald Trump himself, his speeches, his media appearances. People feel inspired by him. You know, many of the Republicans do. He hasn't had to have the superior ground game, and now it's getting a little bit dicier because now, as Ted Cruz puts it, it's more mano a mano. So we'll see whether, you know, he can have the same power.
Trump's starting to spend some money on that delegate game because he sees what's the writing on the wall.
That's right, and he hired a good guy who knows how to do it, too. Brett?
Well, there you go. That's what happened last night, and that's what you know, people are talking about this morning, no matter where you are, about the primaries last night. And, Scott, 769 delegates remain, and it is a mad scramble to Cleveland to try to come up with 1,237 delegates, you know, prior to Cleveland. This thing is, you know, it's got to be a lot of fun, but by the same token, you're just keeping an eye on the Republicans that, you know, they just don't do something crazy here. I don't know, what do you make of this?
It's interesting because Trump was out to a big lead, and I've said the whole time that Trump doesn't say anything of substance, and I think it's finally catching up to him. He says a lot of rah-rah stuff. She mentioned in the clip. Ooh. He gets people motivated, but after you're motivated, you have to have a plan.
Right.
And everything he says after the initial motivation, it falls on deaf ears for me.
Well, and that's the challenge for politicians. That has been the order of the day. I mean, you get all kinds of bumper stickers, but unfortunately, the depth of what is being said on the bumper sticker is just about that thick. And there needs to be some, meat and bones and more meat, to these policies. And I think that's what is going to happen and what's happening now in this next phase of the primaries. This is Bill Martinez, 5 After.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
75 years ago, America suffered one of the worst moments in American history, the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now you can remember December 7th, 1941, with the purchase of the first ever 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-490-3200 right now for the official 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve, the only company authorized to distribute these 100% solid gold coins. Remember Pearl Harbor with this limited official gold release. 1-800-490-3200 or online at usmoneyreserve.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We're back with you, America. Good to have you along with us. Just about 6 minutes after the top of the hour, this is Bill Martinez reminding you that we're in over 270 markets across the country, around the world via shortwave, as close as your smartphone even. That's how smart they are today. With us right now is the author of Scalia's Court, A Legacy of Landmark Opinions and Dissents. Kevin Ring is with us. Kevin is the counsel to Senator John Ashcroft in the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee's Constitution, Federalism, and Property Rights Subcommittee. Kevin Ring, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, congratulations on the book. When you're writing about a justice that is so iconic and whose legacy will live for generations, you got to feel like a little bit like you're on hallowed ground here, did you?
Yes. In fact, I'm glad that the book is not a biography because I don't know that I could do him justice. But, I set out to write a book that would have come out for his 30th anniversary on the court. And as I was finishing it up, of course, the news came in that he had passed. And so, no, it definitely felt like an awesome responsibility, and I'm glad that it's got a more modest aim and is really just trying to set up his opinions, convey his philosophy, but otherwise let him speak for himself.
Well, and that was my sense as I was reading the book, is like it was a book probably that just kind of wrote itself in a sense, because, I mean, it's about him, it's his language. You're tying this all together brilliantly, I might add. I was really impressed in how you did this, but it's just it just comes off the pages, and you get such an added value and perspective of one Justice Scalia.
Well, thank you for saying that. I don't think there could be another book about a justice like this. I mean, there's not many people who want to read Supreme Court opinions all day, and most of them are pretty dry legal language, some statutory interpretation or, some boring legalese. But he didn't write that way, and that's what made him so different and allows a book like this to happen, is just that he was an incredibly persuasive, colorful, funny writer, and paid a lot of attention to his craft. Clarence Thomas told a story about, Scalia coming into his chambers and saying, "Clarence, wait till you hear this one," and he'd read his opinion because he took pride in it. He knew that his words mattered, and he knew that even in dissent, he wanted to call attention to his opinions so that someday some future generation might make those majority opinions. So he was just such a gifted linguist, and that's what I hope people get from this. Even if they disagree with his opinions, they'll see how strong his reasoning was and how gifted he was at conveying his opinions.
And he wasn't, just lost in the language to get lost in the language, as you kind of suggested, Kevin. Some jurists, attorneys even, all due respect, can get caught up in the language and, almost create a, kind of a sub-language in and of themselves. I mean, he really wanted to communicate like you say, if it was a dissent or whatever opinion he was rendering, he knew that, you know, people are going to read it, not only other attorneys and other judges, but, you know, the common man as well. And, you know, this is what I appreciate about your book, is you brought Scalia, you know, to the common man, to where, you know, if they only heard about him, and especially, you know, since his tragic and unexpected death in February, and have read some things about him, this allows us to get a little bit deeper and, you know, to kind of understand and know the man, the judge, you know, a little bit better.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I also appreciate the distinction you're drawing between sort of good language, and by that I don't mean flowery and, you know, just sort of, you know, great syntax and grammar. Mm-hmm. It was his ability to convey complex subjects in simple language. I mean, in some cases you feel like you're reading an extended op-ed, mm-hmm, by, you know, a writer that you enjoy who's conveying important legal subjects, important constitutional debates, but in language that people understand. So when he says things like, you know, a priest has as much liberty to proselytize as a patriot, mm-hmm, he's trying to say that just because you're conveying religious things doesn't mean that you lose your rights to speak under the First Amendment. I mean, he put things in such pithy and sort of concise ways that really made it easier for the common person to understand the debates that were being had at the court.
Well, his, you know, we've touched on this, and not to beat this to death, but, you know, it's just, you know, again, it's part of his brilliance, is his literary style, as you say, and wrote about how it exerted gravitational pull on the law, you know, even when he lost. So it really challenged even those that were victorious. It challenged their position to where, you know, it probably caused them to go back and reread. You know, their opinions to make sure that, okay, it could stand up in light of Scalia's scrutiny.
You know what? And it's exactly right. And it was such a neat story that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg told at the memorial, where she said she had written the majority opinion in a case called VMI. It was U.S. versus VMI, and they were challenging its role as a single-sex institution. Mm-hmm. And Scalia wrote an incredibly barn-burning dissent. And he was, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg was his friend, but he was about to shred her majority opinion. And he went and said, I'm not finished with this draft, but I want you to have as much time with it as you can to respond to as many of the arguments as possible. And that's what's just so amazing about the court, which is so different than the political debate we see, you know, especially in a campaign season, was that he wasn't just trying to score points with his language and his words. He really wanted to have an honest-to-God debate where, you know, he conveyed his views as strongly as possible, and he wanted the other side to try to challenge him and to take him on. And so, that, you know, and she even said, my opinions were stronger for having heard his opposition to them.
Exactly.
And so that's why I think his opinions, you know, they're the most present opinions in law school textbooks, because even when you disagree with them, you need to know why. You need to figure out how he got it wrong, because you knew he was going to have something smart to say.
Exactly. Well, he represented the other side. If there's two dynamics on the court, you've got that progressive, liberal, interpretive side of the, or understanding of the Constitution that it is a breathing document. That seems to be the order of the day, supported by the president. And Scalia believed, no, it's a dead document. What the founders said is what they meant, and we need to consider law. When we're reviewing law against the Constitution, it's against what they had at that time, what they understood the culture to be, not advance the culture and say, okay, we need to reinterpret the law based on what the culture has come to.
That's exactly right, which is not to say that he believed in society not progressing. Mm-hmm. So when it came to clear constitutional rights like the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment against search and seizures, you know, he would protect the Fourth Amendment. He'd protect your liberty in your house from, you know, bomb-sniffing dogs, thermal imaging when they were trying to search a house for marijuana growth. I mean, he would apply it to the Internet. You know, so it wasn't static. He didn't say, well, wait a minute, these things didn't exist at the time, so they can't exist today. It wasn't a Luddite view. All he said was, if it's not in the Constitution, we don't have the power to create rights. So if you want this document to evolve, you need to amend it or you need to convince your fellow citizens in a democracy that they're right. So if you want abortion, if you want physician-assisted suicide, those things aren't my business because they're not in the Constitution. But I'm not for them or against them. You go persuade each other. So he has this view of sort of this dinosaur who wanted to take people backwards in time, but I think all he was trying to do was say there's a limited role for the judiciary, and it's not to be on the vanguard of new ideas and cultural improvement.
Exactly. Well, the unexpected death of Justice Scalia in February, on February 13, 2016, undoubtedly shook America. Not only did the justice system lose a great jurist, but America lost its leading constitutional conservative. We're talking with Kevin Ring, author of the new book, Scalia's Court, A Legacy of Landmark Opinions and Dissent.
From the creators of God's Not Dead.
I hate what people like your clients stand for and what they're doing to our society.
A classroom answer.
One of your students sent a text to their parents. Did this happen?
If you're asking whether I responded to a student's question, yes.
And your answer incorporated the words of Jesus.
Could cost Grace Wesley everything.
The Follies are asking that you be fired, plus revocation of your teaching certificate.
They're looking to destroy you.
I'm not going to be afraid to say the name Jesus. I would rather stand with God and be judged by the world than stand with the world and be judged by God.
Please go free! God's not dead! He's truly alive!
He's living.
God's Not Dead, too. Now play. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Tickets and showtimes available at godsnotdead.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shot the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
My dad was 59 when he collapsed from a heart attack late last year. Just this past August was when we spread his ashes on the St. Croix River. I loved my dad, but boy was he stubborn. He hadn't been to the doctor in over 25 years. His excuse? He simply couldn't afford it. He wasn't a rich man by any means. At less than $107 per month, LibertyOnCall.org would have been the perfect alternative for my father. Don't wait. Go to LibertyOnCall.org right now. For not just your sake, but for the sake of your loved ones. Again, that's LibertyOnCall.org.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
When I met you in the summer.
Join us online at BillMartinezLive.com.
Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here. Always good to have you along with us. For more information on the show, BillMartinezLive.com. That's where you want to go. We come to you Monday through Friday, 3 hours every day now from 9 to noon Eastern Time. With us right now, James Herson. Yes, that one, the original, the one and only, New York Times bestselling author, commentator, media analyst, and law professor. Mr. James, how are we doing, buddy?
Great. How are you doing?
Hey, doing wonderful. I mean, you know, we had a fun weekend. It was nice to relax a little bit. Now we're ready to go, and we're just about the middle of the week now. And, you know, hey, I'm reading your latest article, and cable companies saying the GOP especially in these primaries has been very, very good to the cable companies, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we back away from politics and look at business and money, it's absolutely amazing how much money the cable companies are making. You know, when we turn on the TV lately, if you watch Fox News, CNN, right. The reason for those clocks is because those events have brought in huge bucks. Now, we all know, you know, that there's been these huge rallies for Donald Trump and for Bernie Sanders. And we know there's been a lot of passion for those two campaigns.
Exactly.
And consequently, on the GOP side, you know, debates were at the level of broadcast television ratings. The first one was 24 million viewers.
Welcome back, America. Our conversation continues with the author of Scalia's Court, A Legacy of Landmark Opinions and Dissent. The book is just released, and Kevin Ring is with us. Kevin, the book available in all the usual places, of course, right?
Sure. Amazon, you know, anywhere online, Barnes & Noble, and as they say, fine bookstores everywhere.
Exactly. And it'll be linked on our fine website as well, BillMartinezLive.com. Justice Scalia was not there for the argument of Roe v. Wade, but he chimed in from time to time about it. Give us some insight into his position on that.
Well, those are the most, in my view, no matter what he's written since, those are some of the most powerful opinions he's written in Parenthood versus Casey, which is in the book, Webster, and also then the partial birth abortion decisions that came later. It clearly bothered him that this completely fabricated right that the justices made up in 1973 held on. And remember, he got to the court in 86 when they thought there was a chance to overturn it. And he thought he was going to be writing, you know, a majority opinion to overturn it, send this back to the states for the most part. And Justice O'Connor, Justice Souter, and Justice Kennedy went the other way. And so his opinions there in those cases are some of the most fiery, some of the most passionate opinions you'll read, because he thought in that area, more than any other really, the court just had no business, and what it was doing was bringing disrepute to the court, because then you had protesters coming, standing outside the Supreme Court saying, vote our way, vote this way, and he was thought, this is exactly what we're not supposed to be doing. They should not be lobbying us to get their way. If the Constitution is quiet on this question, which it is, and then there's no history of protecting this right throughout history, there wasn't, then we stay out of it, and we let the people decide. And as later would happen with gay marriage, he thought the country was working its way through this issue democratically.
Exactly.
So he just thought it was a terrible thing for them to usurp that from the democratic process.
Well, if ever the court, I mean, certainly after 73, it became obvious that activism had become the new order of the day. And then there was a question, you know, were they overstepping their boundaries? What happened to the separation of powers? The court was not created to create law. And now you have them stepping into that situation. And I could imagine that Justice Scalia felt that maybe he could right a wrong, you know, reestablish some credibility for the court, because I just sensed that this really bothered him.
Yeah, and as I said, you can see that in the opinion. That, and as I mentioned earlier, people would, you know, make note of the fact that he was calling out other justices by name, belittling their arguments and all the rest. And there was a method to that, which is when you disagree with somebody strongly, I mean, essentially, if you're falsely accused, somebody said, oh, you know, you shot that person, you wouldn't say sort of blandly, no, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You'd say, no, how could you possibly say that? I wasn't, you know, you would vehemently deny it. And so when he was in dissent, he was saying, he was basically jumping up and down on the page saying, look at what they just did. Look how wrong they got this. And so if his language was strong, like I said, it was for a purpose, which was to really draw a sharp contrast so that people could understand just how wayward the court was. And I really think that is what, you know, that has influenced future generations, because all of these opinions now have become well known. They've seeped into the culture. They're in law school textbooks so that people can say, okay, I think he's right on this. And mm-hmm. even Roe v. Wade is a perfect example where you see now here a lot of liberal justices, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg, say it was a poor decision. I mean, they support the right, but even they think the decision was poorly reasoned.
Well, and you mentioned also Scalia's position on gay marriage, and that it was working through the courts, as you wrote about in your book, Scalia's Court. It was working through the states, and the courts kind of preempted that process. And he challenged that. He didn't like that was. And also, he brought to mind that here we are, for a millennia, we've accepted, you know, the nature of marriage, even as noted in the Constitution. And within a short order, I mean, it was a short number of years, 12 years, you know, boom. I mean, this thing, you know, gained traction, and now the court is making a decision on gay marriage.
Right. And Scalia would usually say about this, and somebody was telling the story earlier today about his philosophy on this, which was basically, who decides?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ultimate resolution of the issue is one thing, but who decides is equally important. And so for him, it wasn't nine unelected federal judges in Washington, D.C. who are completely unrepresentative of the population, right? I mean, these are people who are hyper-educated, more than half went to Harvard Law School. They're in their 70s. This is not the face of America.
Exactly.
So his view was, why are you bringing these decisions to us? These are things that our democracy is supposed to work out. And so that's what bothered him a lot, was just the lack of humility. In fact, the arrogance of the court saying, no, we have a better pulse of, finger on the pulse of what the American public is thinking, where they're headed. And this was a classic issue where people on both sides of goodwill had been persuading each other, and things were moving. Sometimes it was passing, sometimes it was losing, but that's democracy.
Well, and that's part of the challenge. You know, we were talking about this recently on the show, is that due process takes time. And, boy, you talk about the clash with this culture. You know, we're a microwave generation. We stand in front of the microwave and yell, hurry up. It just doesn't move fast enough. So then you have due process that goes through its process, and when it does, it works better, you know, I believe. And also a sense of arrogance that the justices had to feel, and I'm sure Justice Scalia felt the same way. You're talking millions of votes got vacated overnight, you know. I mean, 8 million alone in California, you know, not to mention other states across the country.
That's exactly right. So when the court steps in and takes things away from the democracy, it just makes itself the subject of, lobbying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
you're
getting mailbags sent to the Supreme Court saying you're getting, you know, this decision wrong. That's totally backwards. But these are things people should be communicating to their state legislators or their congressmen. And so by being so impatient and stepping in, showing it gets it, you know, it's on the right side, the New York Times is going to praise it for, you know, reasoned judgment, it just takes things away from the people. And I think that's just not an appreciated point. And it's one I think that, you know, people who support originalism, textualism, sort of Scalia's judicial philosophy
mm-hmm.
should make clear when they talk about this that all he's asking is that these issues be preserved for the people.
Exactly. Well, Kevin Ring, what about Obamacare? I know many people were really surprised the way the court came down, especially in light of what some saw as the president's intervention and almost, you know, kind of prodding and, I'm not sure how you'd put it because I want to be respectful here. But I didn't appreciate the president's comments about, to the Supreme Court about Obamacare. It was almost like a warning he sent them.
Yeah, and, you know, remember, I don't remember when he did this with Citizens United, and he chastised the Supreme Court while they were sitting right there at a State of the Union saying
Judge Alito did not like that one bit. No.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's such a perfect example, too, right? Because everyone's for the First Amendment. You know, running an ad about a political candidate 30 days before the election is the most fundamental core political speech the First Amendment was designed to protect. No matter who's funding it. And, you know, and Justice Scalia stands up for Citizens United, but now, you know, people on the left say, well, that's too much freedom, I guess. So it's a strange thing, but I agree with you. I don't like when the president is exerting any sort of influence or even trying to with the Supreme Court. I think it really is a problem for separation of powers. And Obamacare, you know, it's really hard to know what went south there for Chief Justice Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Scalia got those both right. And I think, again, I don't think he wasn't even surprised by the end of his, you know, tenure here that things were going that way. But I think it drove him crazy, especially in one of the cases dealing with the individual mandate, the state exchanges, that the language in the statute couldn't have been clearer. And yet the court rewrites the statutes to try to make it all come out right. And that was pet peeves. You know, that was one of his pet peeves, was to say, our job is not to rewrite the statute. If it's, we interpret it the way they wrote it, and if it's unconstitutional, we send it back to them. That's it.
Well, to me, that was applesauce, but that's just me. Yeah, Kevin Ring, counsel to Senator John Ashcroft in the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee's Constitution, Federalism, and Property Rights Subcommittee. His just released book, I'll tell you, a must read. It is absolutely fascinating and terrific. And thank you so much for doing this, Kevin. Legacy of Landmark Opinions and...
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
Thousands of Americans are losing weight and feeling better with the 10-2-2 weight loss system from ILikeTheWayILook.com. Here is U.S. Army Sergeant Dave Myers.
Since I started taking the Nuvina, I have lost over 12 pounds. I have a long military career, and it has caused some issues with my knees and my ankles over the years, and I have become accustomed to just being in pain with one of those areas. I can only attribute the way I feel to the Nuvina because that's the only thing that's changed in my diet, and I am absolutely pain-free in knees and ankles, and it just...
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
America. Bill Martinez here with you, 28 minutes before the top of the hour. It's always great to have you along with us. If you want to drop me an email, we'd love to hear from you, bill@billmartinezlive.com. We've got the perennial celebrity PR genius with us, the legendary Hollywood publicist Dick Gutman, who publishes his memoir, Starflacker, Inside the Golden Age of Hollywood. And we're going to take a look at over, as best we can, in the short amount of time we have here with Dick Gutman. Dick is the kind of guy you could be with all day and still hunger for more because of the face-to-face, the experience that that he enjoyed over 60 years of working with the biggest names in film. Dick Gutman, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
What a pleasure it is. And we share in common the love of Hollywood, and I thank you for that.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I got to tell you, you know, we were talking just a moment off air about you living in Malibu and your heart there. I drive by Malibu quite often. My mother lives in Port Hueneme, California, so I'm here on the West Coast for a couple of days to visit her. She's 90, almost 92, Dick. And she had a little bit of a fall, had a hip replacement. But I know she's feeling better because she's getting back to her quarter past Henri stage. So I know she's doing good now.
Okay.
You know how that goes.
I think the ocean's a helpful place, even just to look at it.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
I said to my wife one time, why do I feel so good looking at it? And she said, because you know nobody's ever going to build on it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about 60 years of working. I mean, you're working with, you know, Cary Grant, Paul Newman, Audrey Hepburn. I mean, the who's who of Hollywood. What a thrill for you. How did you get there?
I stumbled into it. I was looking. Well, first of all, I'd been a journalist from the time I was a kid, and but I was studying film at UCLA. I go for an office boy job. Part of it, delivering things, I'm delivering it. Kirk Douglas answers the door. I'm thinking, what are these guys doing here? So I started reading the memos I was distributing, and I thought, well, I know how to do this. This is something I can sink my teeth into. It was a great life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was, and when they not only made great movies, you know, they make some great movies now, but in the old days, they poured out of a barrel. We're older. 1939, they had 10 movies nominated. Everyone became a classic. Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, Stagecoach, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Every one of them. And there were 20 films behind them that didn't get nominated. And they're all classic movies. And today, I did some publicity on Spotlight. I was really pleased that it won the Oscar. But there were very few films this year that, you know, could be considered in that class.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your book, you're sharing your memories and, you know, with this A-list group of people that I'm sure, just even as you recount just this brief history of how you got into the business, that you pinch yourself and just say, you know, why me? Of all the publicists and writers out there, you were fortunate to be at the right place.
The book.
Yeah.
I wanted to call the Book of Gratitude, so that people would care about my gratitude. But I had a chance to work with all the great stars, and I have a trick memory where I can remember conversations word for word, comma for comma. And so when Cary Grant calls me in the morning, you'll hear his voice because those are the words that he said. And they were vivid people, you know, they had fun. They knew they were in the process of becoming legends, which nobody is going to do now. Mm. George Clooney is a terrific actor. In his whole life, he'll never make as many great films as Henry Fonda made in any 2 or 3 year period. You know, they just don't make those movies. Now they're making comic book movies, they're making electronic game movies, and it's great. Robert Downey gets $50 million to do an Iron Man. But, you know, Robert Downey's a really good actor. He could be doing substantial films that would live forever.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the difference, right? I mean, it seems that the type of film that's being produced today versus the films of the golden age of Hollywood, right? Big
that's
difference.
That's it. And so the other thing that sort of detracts from the making of legends now is that everything is still available. You know, when I was starting out, everything was, I mean, I still operate and I know how to deal in a time of the internet. But now everything, everybody knows, everybody has access to everything that has. And then the stars add to it because they're, every time they go to the market, they're telling the world about it. Who really cares? What they really cared about is that Rita Hayworth had this mysterious beauty. Mm-hmm. And if you'd hear something little piece about her, you'd be titillated, but now you're bored.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just something about overexposure, isn't there, Dick?
That's what it is.
You can only
knock on the door so many times.
Yeah, exactly. And you talk about the mysteriousness of these celebrities. Yeah, there's a lot to be enjoyed and intrigued and held in the mystery of the people that, you love to see on the big screen or on television, right?
Well, in those days, people invested their dreams in it. They'd see Cary Grant and they'd say, yes, that's what charm is. That's what charm is.
Mm-hmm.
And they would aspire to that. Or they'd see Gary Cooper defined what it meant to be an American. He was straightforward. He was dignified. He was funny. No, he could be goofy. those are all the things that we love. He played Sergeant Yard. He played Lou Gehrig. He played all these people who we could aim for, you know. He gave us a target to aim for it.
And well, Dick, as you were recounting here a phone call from Cary Grant, the way you tell the story is as if you still hear his voice today.
I still hear that. It was an amazing thing. I didn't ever intend to write a memoir, but my teacher and boss, Warren Cowan, died and didn't leave a memoir. I thought, well, I know enough about him, I could do it. But as I did it, all these conversations, Peter Ustinov, I mean, I work with every great comedian. It was a show, you know. Every just being with him was performance art. I was with Jay Leno last year. I had him getting the Mark Twain Prize at the Kennedy Center. So that afternoon, we're going for a run through at the theater, and so going over these. He said, "Are you flying back tomorrow?" I said, "No, my daughter's driving me to Gettysburg." And he said, "For the reunion?" Well, you didn't have to wait. And, you know, that stuff just came out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, for you, you know, these were clients, but they were also friends. I mean, you got to know them on a very personal level. So, you know, when you compare Hollywood today versus then, I imagine there's a little bit of sadness for you in only seeing that what Hollywood has kind of, you know, how it's found itself and how it's evolved to this day. Is there an opportunity for Hollywood to come back and for us to remember, you know, the years and, you know, the mystery and the magnificence of a gone-by era, hopefully not totally gone-by?
You know, I'm not sure. They can still make great films, but I think they're undone by the media because everything is immediately accessible. You know, I mean, Harvey Levin was a really good journalist, and he found a niche with TMZ. It certainly suits the mood of the time, but for me, it strips away the mystery. And the mystery was an important part of it.
Uh-huh. Well, the other thing too, I think people appreciated about your reporting and your journalism, Dick, was that you were very fair-minded. I mean, you treated these celebrities and stars, with respect and honor as fellow human beings in this journey of life that you were going through with them, even though they're big superstars and that sort of thing. People appreciated that you didn't get into the dirt, you know, of any of their lives, so to speak.
Well, I didn't see the point of it. Also, I thought it had nothing to do with the. There's a certain honor.
Right, exactly.
Certainly isn't for a patient.
He's a legendary Hollywood publicist, Dick Gutman. His book, Starflacker, Inside the Golden Age of Hollywood.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
663 million people around the world lack access to clean drinking water. Women and children often bear the burden of walking hours each day for water, time that could be spent at school or work. Access to clean, safe water transforms lives. This year, Emergency and Charity Water have teamed up to transform communities affected by the global water crisis. With help from Fuller House actress Lori Loughlin, the organizations will work to bring clean water to communities in Ethiopia.
As a mother, the facts about the global water crisis are startling. I'm working with Emergency and Charity Water to ask you to help lift the burden with the 40 pounds challenge. 40 pounds represents the weight of a water-filled jerry can that women and children carry every day to bring water to their families. To participate, upload a picture of yourself to Instagram or Twitter holding anything up to 40 pounds with the hashtag 40 pounds and tag @emergency. For every picture, a donation of $5 will go to funding clean water sources in Ethiopia.
Visit emergencytransforms.com for official challenge rules.
By now, you know the smart way to buy emergency food storage is calories per dollar. Ready Supply Foods sells you 50% more food for your money. GMO-free, 25-year shelf life, great tasting, and free shipping. You need 2,000 calories per day under ideal conditions. Most 30-day kits don't have enough calories to sustain you for more than a week. They just don't have enough nutrition to do the job. See the comparisons for yourself at ReadySupplyFoods.com. We are the new leader in value and quality. Go to ReadySupplyFoods.com today.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to gcnteam.com.
Ted Anderson telling you about Jordan Rubin's Beyond Organic Green-Fed Raw Cheddar Artesian Cheese featuring whole milk created through ancient dairy breeding. Unpasteurized, untreated whole milk on the same farm the cows graze. Containing natural sources of omega-3s, CLA protein, calcium, probiotics, and enzymes. I have never tasted cheese this good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to gcnteam.com.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro-1 G2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com or 800-544-3533.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up?
Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here. Always good to have you along with us. For more information on the show, BillMartinezLive.com. That's where you want to go. We come to you Monday through Friday, 3 hours every day now from 9 to noon Eastern Time. With us right now, James Herson. Yes, that one, the original, the one and only New York Times bestselling author, commentator, media analyst, and law professor. Mr. James, how are we doing, buddy?
Great. How are you doing?
Hey, doing wonderful. I mean, you know, we had a fun weekend. It was nice to relax a little bit. Now we're ready to go, and we're just about the middle of the week now. And, you know, hey, I'm reading your latest article, and cable companies saying the GOP especially in these primaries have been very, very good to the cable companies, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we back away from politics and look at business and money, it's absolutely amazing how much money the cable companies are making. You know, when we turn on the TV lately, if you watch Fox News, CNN, CNBC, Fox Business, MSNBC, you see these little countdown digital clocks, and they'll have it, and they'll go sometimes 2-3 days in advance, whatever the next event is, if it's a debate, if it's a town hall meeting, if it's a primary election, you'll see this clock. It'll say, you know, 2 days and 22 hours till the next blank.
Right.
And
right.
The reason for those clocks is because those events have brought in huge bucks. Now, we all know, you know, that there's been these huge rallies for Donald Trump and for Bernie Sanders. And we know there's been a lot of passion for those two campaigns.
Exactly.
And consequently, on the GOP side, you know, debates were at the level of broadcast television ratings. The first one was 24 million viewers. The second, that was on Fox. And the second one at CNN was 23 million viewers. And those are, incidentally, the same kind of numbers that Celebrity Apprentice got when it was in his heyday.
Right.
So Trump is a big part of bringing in the audience. But what, of course, the cable companies do, and there's a publication that tracks this called Advertising Age, where do cable companies get their revenue from advertising. And so what they did after that, those numbers came in on that GOP debate. For example, CNN raised its rate 40 times. So in other words, if you were paying for a 30-second spot on CNN before their big debate that had 23 million people, you would pay $5,000.
Right.
And now you'll pay $200,000, 40 times as much money, which is broadcast television rates. So, and they've been doing that for various events, for debates, for town halls, for coverage. And so the revenue that's been coming in is just phenomenal. And the money to buy the revenue is also increased because of the Citizens United case, the Supreme Court, and just because there's more money in politics.
Exactly. I mean, this year, probably $1 billion per party, right?
I've seen estimates, but when they look at the entire election, that we're talking about maybe $11 billion is going to be spent across the country.
In total.
Now, that doesn't mean, you know, how much each person has raised.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're talking. I mean, the Hillary people have leaked out. They think they're going to go double what Obama did and have $2 billion to spend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
$2 billion. I mean, and so when people growls about money and politics, I mean, what can you do with $2 billion other than a bunch of negative ads?
Well, I think she's going to need $1 billion to pay off the FBI. What do you think?
Well,
just teasing. That's
well,
it.
It's really, yeah. This is the other thing that keeps, I think, people watching this year. They're more involved. They're watching, but part of it is this is very unpredictable on all sides.
Exactly,
and we see on the Republican side, it's unpredictable because we never know what the Republican establishment is going to do next or the Cruz campaign is going to do next. We see this. The Cruz campaign is going into states that Donald Trump has won all the delegates. And one that broke the news today is Arizona. And they're going into those states and trying to elect people to the delegate position that are Cruz supporters in case there's a second round.
Wow.
And so that they'll all switch to Cruz. Cruz is playing a contested convention ground game, and I have to say he's doing it better than anyone else at the moment. But
well, his ground game has been better than just about anybody else anyway. I think this is what Donald Trump could learn a lot from, and Kasich just doesn't have the wherewithal to carry the day. He's pushing for a contested convention as well, but what are the chances of him being the last man standing ultimately?
Well, when the guy, you know, that's another thing that makes things unprecedented and unpredictable is, you know, here's a guy who's won one state out of 30. He's lost 29 and won one, and he stays in the race. Normally the GOP would drum him right out, but he's staying in there because the GOP establishment wants him in there. They want him to do what he did in Ohio. They think maybe he could do it to a more limited way in Pennsylvania, perhaps New York, some of the states where Trump is real strong. One of the things that they've groused about, they said, well, these cable companies, they mention Trump so much.
Mm-hmm.
They mention him or feature him or have him on more than other people.
And why do you think?
Well, it's money. So one part of it is money because Trump attracts big audiences. He's got big ratings. But the other one that was really interesting, and this was the bureau chief of CNN said, Sean Hannity has said this too. They invite the candidates on a regular basis.
Exactly.
And the one who comes on the most is Trump. He makes himself available. Now, I don't know if he's going to continue to do that, especially with Chris Matthews, but I think he'll continue to do it with more, you know, rational interviewers.
Now, you brought up Chris Matthews. Let's talk about this for just a second. You know, he gave, Donald Trump did, gave Hugh Hewitt, you know, he's a good friend of mine, gave him such a bad time, including the last debate that they were in, you know, saying that he was basically a hack, his show doesn't have any ratings and that sort of thing. Now, Chris Matthews has less ratings, I believe, than Hugh Hewitt, but he somehow, Trump got on the you know, balls of his feet, on the heels, I should say, on the heels of his feet. He got backed up, and he was like lost. And Chris Matthews, of all people, ties Trump up. I don't know how that happens.
Well, first of all, I would advise the Trump campaign to never put someone on with Chris Matthews. I personally have been interviewed by Chris Matthews. He specializes in the constant interruption. He doesn't breathe very much, and he speaks, you know, 50 miles an hour, and he'll stay on a topic. He won't get off it. And so if someone is not really, really prepared to deal with that tactic, because you can never finish a thought with Chris. Mm-hmm. If he's in that interruption mode, he'll interrupt you mid-sentence and go back to whatever he in a different variation. So that's what he did to Trump. He asked him a hypothetical question about if abortion was illegal, then who would be punished? And then as Trump began to start to answer spontaneously, Chris Matthews interrupted saying, would the woman be punished? Wait, a woman would have to be punished if it was going to be criminal. And that's the way he is, you know, and he's hyperventilating.
Right.
And that's what knocked Trump. And finally, Trump said, well, somebody has to be punished. Yeah, I guess the woman, you know. It was like this reluctant yield.
Right.
And, of course, the mainstream media pounced on it out
exactly.
of context. It was out of context. It was unfair to take that one little snippet because it was a hypothetical question. But, you know, seasoned politicians are told all the time by their handlers never answer a hypothetical. But Trump's, that's his whole thing. He's not a politician.
Right.
He doesn't have handlers controlling him. So he's going to step in it. That's part of the territory when you're spontaneous. And the next one he's got to be prepared for, because it's coming, is they're going to ask him about same-sex marriage, because there's the story that broke today that says that there are people in the Republican Party, we always have this, that they want to change the platform to allow same-sex marriage, which would, you know, divide the party.
And oh, yeah.
It would be a disaster. But he's going to have some kind of a standard pattern where he walks the line on that. And I don't see how he comes out with something that pleases everyone. But this is part of the mainstream media strategy, and that they are going to do that to him.
Well, yeah, they've been definitely they've been working on Hillary's side just like they did Barack Obama's, and they're using, you know, their power to influence. And I mean, this has been incredible. Like you say, it's been so unpredictable. And now more than ever, you've got all these tentacles coming in from all these different directions into the GOP. I mean, I've talked to people, and I can't believe George Soros is, you know, spending money to influence the Republicans. What do you mean you can't believe? This has been going on forever. We got foreign countries, you know, sticking their tentacles into our democratic process. Why wouldn't you think George Soros, anybody that, you know, for that matter,
oh, yeah.
across lines,
I mean,
you know?
Exactly. And look, what was the meme that they came up with in the last, I think it's been three election cycles, one of the Democrat memes was the war on women.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they're going to bring that up against any candidate that's got GOP attached. And not only that, here's HBO in Hollywood helping out by coming out with a film that revises history and turns Anita Hill into a saint.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
defames Clarence Thomas, which is HBO's specialty. They come out with these films that, and of course the Hollywood goes, oh, and they sigh and give awards to it. Like,
yes,
like
of course.
Out, Game
yeah.
Change. Each one of those won several Emmys. And so this one, it's called Confirmation. And really, I mean, you can tell how much they're idealizing Anita Hill. She's played by Kerry Washington.
Well, not to mention, what are they setting up for the next nominee for the Supreme Court, James? You know that, too. James Hurston has been with us. James, thank you so much, as always. This is Bill Martinez. We're live.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using a computer, or did you buy a new one?
No, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home or business or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site, 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer
repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis, 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks on Site for friendly, certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.